My next guest, beloved listener, is a philosopher and writer. His day job is associate professor at Tokyo University. He's also the youngest winner of the Deutsche Memorial Prize for, of all things, scholarship in the Marxist tradition. So, yes, he's an accomplished person. But when someone offered to publish his first book a few years ago, even he was sceptical of its potential marketability. In his own words, who would read a book on degrowth communism written by a basically unknown scholar? Well, it turned out quite a lot of people. The book became, it sold more than 500,000 copies in his homeland of Japan and has been translated into 10 languages. His name is Kohei Saito, and the English translation of his runaway bestseller is Slow Down, How Degrowth Communism Can Save the World. Kohei, welcome. To what do you attribute your book's astonishing success? Because you were very doubtful that it had an audience.
Yes, I think many people in Japan are now looking for an alternative kind of society, because the experience of the pandemic really demonstrated two main contradictions of capitalism. One is enlarging economic inequality, and that's the basic global trend. And the other one is ecological crisis. And this ecological crisis will be get worsened in the coming decades because of the climate change. And so now people are questioning, okay, this ecological crisis will be even worse. And how can we deal with this under a capitalist system? Because this is a system where a few people monopolize so many resources and money, and at the cost of many people, especially in the global south. So that was my main argument. In the moment of a crisis, we need to share more, we need a different kind of economy, and we also need to slow down a little bit. And that became really popular in Japan.
There's a paradox, isn't there, that even people who are highly successful in the capitalist system do not believe in the future of capitalism and are looking for, perhaps more radical ideas. I think it's important that you tell us about a meeting, an encounter you had at a city train station.
Yes, and you know, the problem is even the rich people are not happy. This system is really about profit making, and capitalism is a system of endless, infinite growth. But the problem is, after a certain point, economic growth is no longer efficient. Economic growth can be maximized by excessive advertisement or privatization of many basic infrastructures of goods and services, including education, water, medical care, and so on. I think this is the same problem happening in Australia too. So that kind of economic growth can actually degrade people's living condition, decreasing social well-being, also destroying, as I said, destroying our planet. So I think especially in a country like Japan, the economy has been stagnating for decades by now, and the population is now decreasing too. So there's a whole point of questioning this way of old style of simply pursuing after economic growth all over the time.
Now tell me about the businessman who came up to you on the station.
Yeah, so even this guy who came to me after the lecture questioned, okay, I basically agree with you, even though he's the owner of one small rubber company. And he asked me, like, what should I do? I want to follow your idea. And he has apparently read my book. And in the book, in Slow Down, I explicitly wrote, the company can be owned by workers. It can be turned into a workers' cooperative. And that's one way of increasing workers' well-being, and it can be managed in a more democratic manner and so on. So it seemed that this money, this company owner kind of consciously neglected my claim and asking a kind of a better solution, somehow keeping his own position, but at the same time doing good for the environment and his workers and so on. But I think this is a, you know, the basic solution that people usually look for. Like, we don't want to abandon capitalism. We don't want to abandon this way of affluent life, especially in the global north. And today we have, you know, many discussions about green growth, green capitalism, sustainable development goals, and Green New Deal, and so on. But these are the kind of the illusionary solutions which hides the fact that actually the capitalism is the root cause of all the contradiction that we are experiencing today. And without challenging this root cause, capitalism, we cannot find a solution for all.
Let's go back a few years. You've described the crisis at Fukushima as a turning point for you.
Yes, actually, you know, now I criticized things like Green New Deal or green kind of development, green growth, and so on. I was more optimistic about the possibilities of green technologies like electric vehicles, renewable energies, and maybe like nuclear power plants and so on. Because I simply believe that many problems that we have under capitalism can be overcome once there is a more democratic control of the means of production, and we can so kind of like participate in decision-making process free from the constant pressure of profit-making and the market competition and so on. But I was wrong, actually. I was only concerned about inequality, mainly because of the workers working in the temporary jobs and so on. That was a very big problem 15 years ago in Japan. So that's how I became active in workers' unionism when I was an undergraduate student. But then 2011, the earthquake hit Fukushima, and there was a nuclear explosion there. And I realized that actually, you know, the inequality is not simply between capitalists and workers in such a classical Marxian term, but also the huge inequality actually exists between big cities like Tokyo and Fukushima, because Fukushima nuclear power plant was generating electricity for Tokyo people, and they are not used in Fukushima at all, but all the risks and the costs were externalized from Tokyo to the people and the environment in Fukushima. So that kind of inequality actually obviously exists between affluent country in the global north and many poor countries in the global south. So I came to recognize this tension is actually much more serious, and this can be even worse in the moment of green transition, because we need to produce a lot of electric vehicles and renewable energies. And for that sake, we need a massive extraction of rare metals, lithium, cobalt, nickel, and copper, and so on. And these resources are often located in the global south. And then that means that if people, rich people, affluent people in the global north want to simply preserve the existing imperial mode of living today, it can create many disastrous consequences in the global south. So this is one reason why we cannot simply count on the green technologies, but we need to radically challenge this way of imperial mode of living in the global north. And this is why I suggest the transition to degrowth kind of economy.
Now, at this point, let's look at how Kohei Saito turned to Karl Marx. I had no idea that there were unpublished notebooks.
Yeah, I mean, so after the nuclear explosion, I started to question at kind of the optimistic idea that, yeah, that this is kind of a very popular idea among socialists and Marxists, and I used to endorse, and which is the new technologies developed under capitalism could be used for better purposes once somehow socialism is established. So socialism can be more green, more efficient, and more equal, sustainable, and so on. But that was wrong because nuclear power plants cannot be sustainable, even in a post-capitalist society, in socialism. So simply maximizing technological development and productivity is not the solution to many problems that we have today, especially the ecological crisis. And then I started to question the kind of the progressive view of history, which is characteristics to Marxism. And I, you know, okay, maybe Marx was really wrong and I have to criticize and so on. But then I came across in Germany, I came across to many unpublished notebooks. And in these notebooks, Marx actually intensively studied natural sciences and especially with the ecological interest. So he studied issues like exhaustion of the soil or excessive deforestation and even extinction of species. So he was studying how capitalist development was actually causing all these kind of problems. And he uses the term metabolism between humans and nature. So this relationship, metabolic interaction between humans and nature is radically disrupted because capitalism is only about profit making and constant expansion and acceleration. And the metabolic process of nature is radically undermined. And this is why he paid attention to these concrete examples of ecological issues in the 19th century. And I think this is used, this can be used even in the 21st century because the things like disruption of carbon cycle is basically the manifestation that we use so many fossil fuels in a, such a short time or period. And then this is really disturbing the Earth system, right? So I think this is the time that we can sort of integrate Marxian critique of capitalism, both not only for the sake of criticizing economic inequality, which is also very serious, again, in the 21st century, but also for this planetary ecological crisis.
70 years ago, I was a member of the Communist Party in Australia and dutifully read my Marx. But I had no idea that anything he'd written, not even his laundry list, had not been published, let alone that he was so prescient on matters of ecology and sustainability. This is astonishing to me.
Yeah, thank you. It's very interesting because the problem is our typical image of Marxism or socialism is often associated with the Soviet Union. So this is a kind of a construction under the 20th century. But Soviet Union was also, kind of like a state capitalism, and which was obsessed with economic growth, modernization, and all the kind of competition against the USA and so on. There was no democracy of the workers. There was no attention to the ecological sustainability. So this is really different from what Marx was actually trying to think about in the 19th century. So my project, because I was born in 1987, so I don't have much experience with kind of the old actually existing socialisms like Soviet Union or China. So it was lucky for me to more critically examine Marx's own writings, and it was surprisingly very relevant today because he was actually the ecological thinker already in the 19th century.
Now, you also encountered the thinking of, the young people and their movements, Greta Thunberg and Extinction Rebellion.
Exactly. So that was actually the moment I started to really thinking about the idea of degrowth and degrowth communism, which is basically, I really came to recognize the unsustainability of existing model of living. And even if we massively invest in green technologies, in socialism, or some kind of more democratically managed social democracy, it is simply not sustainable to have so many cars running outside, and I think this is the same in Australia. And So that means technological development alone is not enough. It's not fast enough. We need to decarbonize the entire economy in 20 or 30 years. And this is really a rapid transformation of everything.
Now, you've
But
gone
the
from a
problem.
belief in, well, what could be described as a green Keynesianism to this notion of degrowth communism. Be patient with me and please explain what is it exactly and how would it work?
Yes, because so Greta Thunberg and Extinction Rebellion actually argues that we need a much bigger transformation. Simply investing in green technologies is not enough. We need to reduce and slow down what is unnecessary. So degrowth is actually the project that we abandon GDP as a measure of progress because GDP counts many unnecessary things like military expansion and privatization of basic services and goods and advertisement as well. And degrowth also argues for distinguishing what is necessary and what is unnecessary. And this can be debatable, but for example, private jets, I don't think it's necessary because we never use it, but it's very bad for the environment. So we can actually reduce many things in a democratic manner. And the problem is degrowth capitalism is simply a kind of contradiction because capitalism uses surplus value to reinvest so that they can expand. So the capitalism is a system of constant expansion. Capitalism without growth is bad capitalism. It's a failing capitalism, like recession. So degrowth is actually a kind of planned transformation, planned slowdown, planned slowing down, or something like that. And degrowth cannot be compatible with capitalism. So I argue for degrowth communism. Why? Because when the economy is no longer growing, we need to share more. And sharing is about making things common property, commons, and the rehabilitation of commons like public transportation, free education, free medical cares, more public housing, and that kind of things is like making things no longer commodity.
Kohei,
Decommodification is.
you've got a problem here because you use two words which frighten the hell out of people, degrowth and communism.
Oh yeah, that's my intention. So degrowth is but simply not about frugality. It's not about making us all poor, but it is about new way of living in abundance, but it's a public abundance, which is, as I said, it is about free education, free water, free, free water may not be good, but free, free medical care, free public transportation, free internet. And these are the things that is essential for everyone. But these things are commodified today. So we have to work so many hours and we actually destroy the planet too. And we never get kind of stability because we have to pay all the bills, education, electricity, car, rent, and so on. And this is a society that compels us to work for more and more. And degrowth is actually so, in a sense, we aim for another kind of abundance, the kind of stability of our basic satisfaction of needs. But communism is obviously another scary term, but it is not about bringing Communist Party with a Stalin taste. It is about, as I said, making those essential goods and services common goods, common property. So the society based on commonwealth, democratically managed wealth of society is, for me, communism.
So the old
Capitalism.
model was very top-down and hierarchical, and you want to turn it upside down.
Exactly. So the problem of Soviet Union was there was no democracy, no freedom of speech, and it was very top-down, basically the dictatorship by the party and the bureaucrats. My idea of communism is more bottom-up, creating commons, workers' cooperative, democratically managed, corporations, and we can also create various kinds of groups, NGO, NPO, and expand these kind of public abundance everywhere. Capitalism is about commodification of everything. In contrast, communism, in my own sense, is commodification of everything, making everything commonwealth, commons. And that's a society that we can actually imagine well. We can imagine a society where, you know, education is free, which is, you know, already existing in countries like Germany, free medical care, which is also the case in many European countries. And countries like Japan, US, and Australia, we can actually learn from how these decommodification are way of improving people's well-being as well as protecting the planet.
It seems to me that we've lost much of our collective imagination, which has left the door open to the likes of Trump.
Yes, so the problem is if we continue capitalism, the planet will be more scarce. I mean, the ecological crisis will be worse. And in that sense, the capitalism becomes more competitive over resources, food, water, and land. And that kind of society will be a kind of climate fascism, I'm afraid. So in order to prevent the society where only a few people can continue to enjoy excessive kind of lifestyle at the cost of many people, if this continues, this will lead to a very bad situation where many people, especially from the global south, are denied access to basic goods and services, and they are deprived of the land, deprived of food and water. I think we really should or must stop this kind of climate fascism. And unfortunately, the kind of right-wing populism is emerging everywhere, including Europe and the US. So my proposal of degrowth communism sounds, I know, scary, but it is one of the few solutions that radically challenge the root cause of today's poly crisis. And this kind of imagination is really necessary in order to envision a better future today.
Now, you're not entirely opposed to the nation state, but you've come up with an ism that I'm unfamiliar with. Would you please explain to your listeners what municipalism is?
Yes. So the idea of communism or socialism was associated with kind of the top-down, strong state dictatorship. I want to change that image because we need a new political imaginary and we need to revive the socialist communist tradition. And one way of doing this is looking at the bottom-up kind of democratic management of commonwealth, and which is emerging in Europe, that is municipalism. And this is a kind of attempt that, especially in the last decades, EU was dominated by huge corporations and there were a lot of privatization, and the local people are deprived of the possibility of democratically participating in important decision-making processes. So this is a new democratic movement. Big cities in Europe, like Amsterdam, Berlin, Paris, and these cities are now the main subject of social transformation. These cities, which are of course closer to its citizens, so that people can more effectively participate in decision-making process, and they will take back controls of many issues like water.
With a degree of independence from the nation state.
Yes, independent, kind of the dependence on the nation state and dependence on EU, dependence on global corporations. So it is really creating a new sphere of democracy. And this is a learning process of various cities and a kind of international network from the bottom-up perspective, which is municipal.
And you say that this experiment is being undertaken from Barcelona to Berlin.
Exactly. So all the cities, the major cities like Barcelona, especially where the idea of fearless city came out, and then they are really fighting against global corporations and the EU, and inspired by the experiences or experiments in Barcelona, other cities like Amsterdam, Berlin, they follow the same path. And this is really the lively transformation. Like they are introducing, for example, Amsterdam recently banned the construction of new hotels because Amsterdam, its people are suffering from the over-tourism. Berlin, re-communication of electricity and water. And these are the attempts already conducted under capitalism, but that is compatible with the progressive idea of degrowth society, in my own viewpoint.
Now, I'd like you to tell me about the forest project in Japan, in which you are involved.
Exactly. So, unfortunately, there's not many bottom-up movements like Barcelona in Japan. So I started a new project called Common Forest Japan. In Japan, the 70% of the lands are actually forests. But these forests are often abandoned because they are not profitable, and owners had to pay taxes, so they simply abandoned. People also getting very, very old, and taking care of forest is obviously an enormous task for those old people. So we collectively buy some of the forests near Tokyo, and we together sort of learn. I usually live in center of Tokyo, so I have no experience in managing forests. But we have some people who have very good experience that we are trying to create common spaces within big cities like Tokyo. And then we learn from each other. We get more closer to this idea of how we can build commons, because we often feel very powerless. We are so much dependent on money and commodity and capital, but we want to take back this power that we can actually create commons. And then I hope that this experience will spread in various ways. It doesn't have to be forests all the time. It can be about river management or kind of urban gardening and that kind of thing. So I'm hoping that this experience will expand more in the future.
Now, beloved listeners, to bring this all down to a few simple words, we have to have a new system of values to cultivate solidarity, mutual aid and justice to achieve degrowth communism. And we've been listening to philosopher Kohei Saito, who's the author of this extraordinarily successful book, Slow Down, How Degrowth Communism Can Save the Earth, and it's published here in Australia by Hachette. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.